Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa, text number 44, which has no purport, so we'll read just the translation. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, and could assume any form they desired. After giving these demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa entered his palace. Text 45. Tevai Raja Prakritayas Tamasa Muda Chetasaha Satam Vidvesham Ache Roar Arad Agata Ritavaha. Hey, all the Asuric ministers, Vai, indeed, Raja Prakritayaha, surcharged with the mode of passion, Tamasa, overwhelmed by the mode of ignorance, Buddha Chaitasa, foolish persons, Satam, of saintly persons, vivesham, persecution, ache roar, or ache ru, executed, arad agata mritya vaha, pending death having already overtaken them. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Surcharged with passion and ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the Asuras, for whom impending death was waiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. Prabhupada stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Deno sminyata dehe komaram yovanam jara Tathadahantara praptir diryastatra namuyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Irresponsible persons who are charged with passion and ignorance foolishly do things that are not to be done. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma. But one should know the results of irresponsible actions, as explained in the next verse. Text 46. My dear King, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, name, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. As in the Bhaktivedanta Purports of the 10th Canto, 4th Chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled, The Atrocities of King Kamsa. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the chapter called Transcendental Knowledge, Krishna explains to Arjuna how transcendental knowledge is received, beginning with the verse Imam Vishvate Yogam Pogdavanaham Avyayam Vivishvan Manave Praha Manor Ikshvakave Bravi. Transcendental knowledge comes from Krishna. Krishna is the original spiritual master of everyone. As he says, Sarvasya Chaham Ridhi Sanivishto Matak Smritir Jnanam Aponam Cha. That Krishna is in every living entity's heart, and from him comes remembrance, comes knowledge, and comes forgetfulness. So whatever we remember comes from Krishna. Whatever we can't we remember comes from Krishna. And whatever our present state of consciousness is, or awareness, that also comes from Krishna. But Krishna is equal to everyone. He arranges our remembrance, he arranges our knowledge and forgetfulness according to our own choices. And those choices come primarily who we're going to hear from. If we hear from Krishna and from his representatives, then our minds will be filled with ideas, at least, about Krishna consciousness. And if we hear from others, then our minds will be also invaded by other kinds of ideas and thoughts. So that's up to us, who we want to associate with. Krishna recommends we associate with those who have heard from him in disciple succession, beginning with the sun god Vibhishan, or beginning with Krishna speaking to Arjuna 5,000 years ago on the battlefield Kurukshetra, and that knowledge is passed on by Śrīla Vyāsadeva in the Mahabharata in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, of course, the idea is not only to hear, but to actually serve the words. That's what the words tell us, we should serve them. Because serving the words of Krishna is the same as serving Krishna directly. It is directly serving Krishna. So Krishna spoke to the sun god, and then he explains in the Bhagavad Gita what his purpose was. Evam param praptam imam rajarshiyo vidu sakalene ha mahato yago nashita parantapa. That this parampara of one person speaking to the other about what Krishna has said is the means of hearing Krishna's message externally. Otherwise, without hearing Krishna's words externally from Krishna's representatives, then it's very hard to understand what's the difference between what Krishna is saying and what our minds are saying. Therefore, some explanation is needed so we can filter out what Maya is saying and what Krishna is saying, and so we can act with determination to please Krishna. If we act with hesitation, then of course the spirit will not be as the same way. Of course, we should think carefully about what to do. But if we know what to do and we don't do it because we have some other ideas, then that will not be very devotional. Therefore, Krishna says, evam, what is that? Saketimam sarai. Saevayamayateda yoga prakta pratana. Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasam hieta utama. So at least we should try to become a bhakta. In other words, the reason why Krishna was speaking to Arjuna in the first place is that at least he was trying to become a bhakta. Therefore, Krishna was willing to give him some instructions how to become a bhakta. If one is not interested in becoming a bhakta, a devotee of Krishna, then there's no need to hear Bhagavad Gita, because then it has no value. Bhagavad Gita is only meant to help us become a devotee of Krishna. It has no other purpose. And if we read the Bhagavad Gita in that spirit, then it's valuable instruction. Otherwise, it has no value. If your idea is that you want to become a garbage collector, then there's no need to go to university and study chemistry. You'll find out the chemistry quick enough about the garbage you're collecting. That one should go and learn something if it has some relevance to the activity that one is going to perform. Otherwise, the Śrīla Prabhupāda would say, you can study to become a doctor, but if you don't practice being a doctor, you're not really a doctor. You have to have not only the theoretical knowledge, but you have to have the experience knowledge. So the experience is meant to become a devotee. Now Krishna knows Arjuna had asked him, he had already surrendered to Krishna in the second chapter, therefore Krishna understood his intention was to become a devotee. And therefore he was going to explain to him transcendental knowledge. Ajopi san navyatma bhutanam ishropi san prakritim svam adishtaya sambhavamya Maya, that although I'm unborn, Krishna says, my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all creatures, all sentient beings, I still appear in every millennium. So here Krishna is saying he's eternal. He's already told Arjuna that in the second chapter. We're all eternal. So the question is why he's coming. He's obviously not coming to become liberated because he's already liberated. So he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shijamyaham. Whenever there's a rise of irreligion, in other words, it's not only Krishna's message that's being distributed. Previously, when they had the printing press in Sweden, the Gothenburg printing press, the first things that they print were Bibles. Before that, everything was handwritten. And it wasn't a big printing. They only could print a few at a time. But there was no competing information either. Practically, I'm sure there was competing information. There was a lot of competing. But in terms of things that were written, generally speaking, the only thing that people bothered to write, besides small poems or whatever it was, the major book was always the Bible, in the Western world at least. And in India, there were books, but they were not widely distributed either. Only the Brahmins would get those books. People in general, they just learned how to cultivate the field, if they were Vaishyas, protect the cows, etc. There's no need for elaborate education, because if you could get milk and nice food, then you didn't really have to become a scholar of some kind of fantastic thing, how many quarks fit into an atom. It has no real value. Even if you know how many quarks fit into an atom, still you have to get something to eat. Still you need a bed to sleep on. This knowledge has no real practical value. You can't eat. You can't go on a dark diet for quarks. I found out there were 5 billion quarks in an atom. I think I'll only take 3 billion today. It has no meaning. It has no value, really. So then the real knowledge is knowledge of how to be religious. And in the absence of that, one automatically has knowledge of how to become sense gratification. The Shudras, everyone who's born Shudra, everyone knows from birth how to eat and how to sleep. Sex life doesn't require elaborate education. It doesn't require studying Freud. And similarly, defense, everyone can defend in their own way. It's like every year they come out with a new tank with more protection. And then their opponents come out with another tank which overrides the protection. And the next year they come up with more protection and a bigger gun to override the other person's protection. So that way, they're spending billions and billions of dollars competing with each other, ever-ending, to make an improvement, simply to try to kill each other. Previously, people used to take a rock and smash the opponent on the head. It didn't cost very much. There were plenty of rocks around. It was economically viable. And the rest of the energy was meant to get good food and happy relationships. Just a few people picked up rocks and smashed people on the head with. But the same thing was accomplished. You killed people that way. But now they have to spend billions and billions of dollars and euros to kill someone. It's a very expensive project. But you get the same accomplishment if you just hit them with a rock. And if everyone has a rock, there's no upgrade. there's no superior rock that you have to spend millions of dollars to research, which is the best rock to hit someone with. So modern civilization is simply a waste of energy, trying to find better ways to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Well, at the end, they simply wind up with the same thing. If you get killed by an atomic bomb, you're as dead as if you killed by a rock. It's not that I got killed by an atomic bomb, and therefore I feel much better than if I was killed by a rock. I was killed scientifically, so. So Krishna says he comes and he delivers this knowledge of how to make progress. And that knowledge, as Prabhupada said, if you light a match in a dark room, the darkness can't put the match out. So in spite of the fact they have so much information on the internet, you can buy so literally millions of books on Amazon.com, still it's not, people are still dissatisfied. They don't know anything. They don't even know who they are. After going to college for 40 years and studying all kinds of sciences and getting your PhD in all kinds of spheres of knowledge, still one doesn't even know he's not the body. So he's in ignorance. He just wasted all the time. But if one reads Bhagavad Gita and understands that we're not this body, we're eternal, as explained here, then that surpasses all the other 40 or 3 billion years of studying nescience. Because, as it says in the Upanishad, knowledge, practical knowledge, has some value also in the material world. For instance, we may study how to filter water so all the chemicals that they put into it are minimized. So that's material knowledge, but it has some association with spiritual knowledge, because if we're dead, it's very hard to hear Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we have to utilize some knowledge for our health, at least. So then Krishna says, and what is this knowledge? What does it summarize? Do we need 500 books to figure out why Krishna comes? No, he says this, Paritranaya sarunam, vinashaya tridiskritam, dharma samstapanarataya, sambhavam yuge yuge. He comes in order to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish religious principles. He advents himself millennium after millennium. And that's our history of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Krishna is killing the demons, how he's protecting Prahlad Maharaj, how he's protecting the Pandavas, and how he's speaking Bhagavad Gita to enlighten people on the path of liberation in Krishna consciousness. So of course in this age, where everyone is a demon, practically speaking, everyone is adverse to transcendental knowledge, everyone is more or less envious of each other, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Krishna doesn't come and kill the demons. Because, according to the estimation of the Bhagavatam, the demons are already dead. Their consciousness is so low, they might as well be dead. So instead, he comes to wake up the souls, annihilate their demoniac mentality, and to revive their original spiritual consciousness, to make them into devotees. And the service in this age is not killing demons like Arjuna did by shooting arrows into them. It's shooting transcendental vibrations into people's ears, so they wake up the soul. So that's the main... Other than that, people are engaged. We can see the demons in the Krishna Leela, they live for hundreds of years. And the demons nowadays, we're only living, if you live for 70, 80 years, you're considered to be old. That was probably you were ready to go to school when you were 70, 80 years, the previous ages, in their ages, in their timeline. Why? Because people are sinful. They're committing so many offenses against each other, against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we can see that's why the duration of life has been greatly reduced. And because they're sinful, we can see, therefore, the air is contaminated, the water is contaminated, the food's contaminated, our consciousness is contaminated. Therefore, we can't live very long. Everything is unfavorable towards maintaining the body in a healthy condition. Luckily, at the end of Kali Yuga, when everyone is practically reduced to the size of a pygmy, if you're half a meter tall, you're eligible for the national, you're a center in the professional basketball player. And at the end, when most of the population is little pygmies running around trying to eat each other, then at least at that time when people have no intelligence, the air probably becomes purified. There's no industry. Of course, there's no food, so not a very healthy diet people have in general. But the air is clean, probably the water becomes purified after some time. Just like during the pandemic, when the demons were trying to torture each other. Then it was noted that in some places, like in India and Delhi, that because the industry stopped, the air pollution went down. And people could actually see the sky. They discovered the sun was still there. They thought maybe the clouds had taken the sun away. They could breathe the air. And even here, they stopped with this cloud covering. I forget what they call that. When they put things into the air, they see what do they call that when they cover the air with these planes, with these chemtrails? Chemtrails. They stopped it because they figured everyone was sick enough. They didn't really have to add too much more to it. So even though the sky over Ljubljana became clearer. So that happens at the end of Kali Yuga. And then, of course, Kalki comes and kills all the demons. And because everything is pure, whoever devotees are left, their duration of life increases. There's no internet. There's nothing to buy. Life is simple. You just simply chant Hare Krishna. There's nothing else to do. There's no distraction. And so people live longer. And that's why those who survive, then they start the next Satya Yuga. And here we find that the demons are interested in killing Krishna. They're interested in killing Krishna's devotees. And therefore, their whole activities are demoniac, unhealthy. I really seriously doubt whether... We know that Putana wasn't a vegetarian. We doubt whether any of them, Agasura, well, he wasn't a vegetarian either. He even ate Krishna. Bakasura wasn't a vegetarian. He tried to swallow Krishna too. None of them were probably vegetarians. They didn't follow any principles. And because they were demons, their duration of life was shortened. Of course, they came and Krishna liberated them when he killed them. But it's not good to be a demon. Demon means not that you have two horns and a tail. Demon means you don't follow Krishna's instructions, even the basic ones. Like protecting cows, but here we find the demons, they want to kill the cows. But they're not the only demons. 5,000 years ago, wanted to kill cows. Now, the modern demons want to kill cows too. They claim that the problems we have is due to carbon emission, which are principally coming from the cows passing air. So in all around Europe especially, they want to kill hundreds and thousands of cows so there's no more air pollution caused by the cows. And that will solve all our problems. There'll be a Satya Yuga based on killing mass slaughter of animals. But actually, they're unintelligent. Adharma dharma itiva manyate tamasavritaha sarvatam viparitamscha buddhisaparta tamasi. They don't know what's to be done or what's not to be done. As a matter of fact, they say what is to be done is not to be done. And they say what is not to be done, that's to be done. And therefore, they're always striving in the wrong direction. Instead of increasing their happiness and their duration of life, they're torturing themselves and others and finding themselves more and more sick. The more money you have, the more you misuse it, then the more you wind up putting yourself and others into difficulty. Just like the demons. Therefore, there's lazy intelligent, there's active intelligent, there's active foolish, is lazy foolish. So the best is the lazy intelligent, the Brahmins. They don't try to endlessly try to exploit the material world or control it. They do things that are necessary so they can concentrate on Krishna. And the worst are the active foolish, the Naradamas, who've gotten some intelligence enough to keep themselves active, but all their activities are detrimental for themselves and for others. At least if you're foolish and you can't do anything, you're more harmless. Just like the deer in the forest, they're foolish, but they can't do much harm. But the monkeys, they're active foolish. They go around causing mischief everywhere. So modern so-called educated people, they're actively foolish, and therefore they're creating havoc in society. There's even a proposal, now they want to block out the sun. People with money, they want to go all around the planet and put chemtrails everywhere so there'll be no more sunlight, so there will be no more global warming. They've invented something called global warming out of their imagination, and now they want to counteract it by taking care of the emblem of health and vitality and energy, the sun. They want to block it out. So their intelligence has been taken away by illusion. Therefore, the conclusion is stand on Krishna's side rather than the demon's side, because even you become, they give you so much adoration, they give you so much profit, being a demon, it's going to be a waste of time. It won't add to one's real knowledge, nor to one's happiness, nor will it even increase one's lifetime, but put one simply into more and more difficulty. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah. Well.
Thank you. What kind of people go to hell?
People who are not so nice. People who are against Krishna, basically speaking, don't follow Krishna's instructions. You can go to hell by simply increasing one's lust, one's anger, and one's greed, and coming into the mode of ignorance. The more one becomes ignorant, the more one becomes forgetful of spiritual values, the more one becomes... if you read the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that will explain everything, that all the qualification to go to hell. Just don't read Bhagavad Gita, especially. After you read the 16th chapter, if you're really determined to... someone's determined to go to hell, then they should just read the 16th chapter and cultivate exactly what Krishna tells them not to cultivate. Do the opposite of what Krishna says. Or take to the path that Krishna says will bring one to hell, and then one is sure to get there very quickly. Or as Prabhupada said when he was in London and he was being interviewed, they asked him, some reporters, can you please tell us what hell is? And Prabhupada said, London is hell. If you know what, want to know what hell is. Anything else? Yes. Are you raising your hand, Lily? No. Anything else? Kuala, Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Kijai.